pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. It is finally a Friday. Text line 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me. Coming up on the program this morning, kick it off here in just about a half hour, Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News and in Capital Journal. We're jam-packed today, by the way. 10 o'clock. Steve Marshall is going to be with us. We'll talk about the big Supreme Court decision, I guess it was, about Alabama and quashing the preliminary injunction that was preventing Alabama from proceeding with the 6-1 map, despite some kind of careless and reckless maneuvers from the governor's office right in the lead up to it. And then in the 10:30 block, we'll talk to Adam Kincaid from the Republican Redistricting Project. We'll get his thoughts on sort of the phenomenon in Alabama, but as it sort of pertains to what's going on around the country. And, you know, are there other pickup opportunities? And then, like, how feasible is it that we get to the 7-0 map and soon? In the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to get him on for a little bit. You sports ball guys can tune out, I guess. We'll talk SEC, or at least Auburn and Alabama baseball. Both are hosting super regionals. Maybe we'll squeeze in some Troy. Hunter Johnson from Tide 100.9 in Tuscaloosa is going to spend a little bit of time with us on this eve of the super regionals. And then at 11:30, we do it every Friday, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. So please make sure you stay tuned or tune in for that. Either way, we appreciate it. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the program, hit us up there. Let us know what is on your mind. You know, a number of things here. Surprise, Graham Plattner's a scumbag. It's a, I hear there's more coming on this. So my guess is what happened here, as soon as they knew he was going to be the nominee, the Susan Collins machine in Maine, she's been a senator forever. She has people. And just in general, a lot of Washington, D.C. types who just don't want a guy like him. The former tune-in bartender in the United States Senate, they unloaded their oppo. And why would they wait? Well, they saw Plattner as an easier opponent than Janet Mills, the crazy governor of Maine. So if you haven't heard, there's a big like New York Times story. It's like blast from the past of all these things that were going on. At the time, the tune in, those of you familiar with Capitol Hill, it's a drinking town. It was back then. Let me see if I can set the picture here. Because Washington, D.C. is a much different place now. Post-COVID, it's way, way more dystopian. It actually started trending dystopian when Donald Trump became president. Because, you know, just it's a Democrat town, and when you have a Republican president, people go home. I mean, you know, this is the way it works in administrations. You have Republican bureaucracies and Democrat bureaucracies. And having lived up there during the Obama years, I'm just telling you, Democrats party. it was more of a party town. People were coming, you know, for the weekend to hang out in D.C. and go to all the cocktail parties and all the events and, you know, go hang out at the trendy places in Georgetown. And this is the Obama years, I guess. It's a much different place than it is now. Now it's just everything is just shuttered and crime is rampant. They had to deploy the National Guard. But the place where Graham Plattner was a bartender was the Tune In. If you go to D.C., it's Pennsylvania Avenue. There's one side of the Capitol, Pennsylvania Avenue, connects the White House and the Capitol. It's a strip there. There's a lot of government, a lot of historic landmarks, and it kind of goes north of the National Mall. And then it stops abruptly there, right at the front of the U.S. Capitol. And then on the other side, the backside of the Capitol, there's the Supreme Court. But Pennsylvania Avenue picks back up. And we go a couple of blocks past all of the House office buildings. We actually did one of our shows from one of those House office buildings back in April. And from what I'm about to tell you about, there's a strip there. There's some maybe office buildings. There's a little bit of residential. And then Pennsylvania Avenue picks back up, and there's kind of a strip of, like, restaurants and bars. It's, if you know, you're familiar, like, Capitol Lounge and Hawk and Dove and places like that. But at the very, very end down there is a place called the Tune In, where Graham Plattner apparently was serving up cocktails. It was kind of a divey place. All those places used to be really divey. During my time in D.C., it's where Hill staffers would go. But it was also like a little bit of touristiness to it as well. Where, you know, not the sightseer type of tourist, like, wow, daddy, look at the Washington Monument. But like the local union chapter would foot the bill for a number of their members to go to D.C. for the week to go talk to their congressman and senator, the trade association types. And this is where, like, these people who were coming in from all around the country, this is where they go drink after they met with their respected member of Congress. But at the very end down there, almost to there's like a metro stop. It's like Cap South, and then there's another one, Eastern Market. The very end down there was the Tune In, and I bet you, and I know, like, it's funny to think about this, but like, how many people over the years have done a tour of duty in D.C. and have spent time at this? And apparently Todd Stacey as well, who we're about to talk to, would go down there, and that would be a place. But I can't believe this Graham Plattner stuff. I think there's probably going to be a whole lot more here, and they're going to, if Maine had a Roy Moore figure who seemed to be a really good retail politician, far exceeded expectations, and somehow winds up with a major party nomination, he's sort of the Roy Moore of Maine. Not in a philosophical sense or a moralistic sense or whatever, but he is the outsider, oddball. And this is the way the system works. They keep guys like that out. So kind of interesting, I guess. Meanwhile, here in Alabama, we have a Senate race underway. Apparently, we're still arguing about military service. I don't know. It's becoming more of a he said thing. Not he as in anybody in particular, but who is making accusations against who. And this stuff to me at this stage of the race is trying to swing it one way or another. I mean, it seems like a lot of it's baked in. But so talking to Sam Roberts yesterday from Tacoma Daily, I mean, his tracking polls are showing Jared Hudson making big time gains. Even though he lost by 14 points in the primary. We're kind of talking about, like, there's two times in recent memory when a candidate wins by double digits in the primary and loses in the runoff. And one of those involved Barry Moore. That was a unique circumstance. Barry Moore running against Jeff Coleman, Jessica Taylor, Troy King. Even Will Dismukes was in that race for a while. And it's a Jeff Coleman race with a dogfight for second to get into the runoff. Barry Moore emerges by a few hundred votes over Jessica Taylor. Now Jessica Whaley. And gets into runoff. And then we have COVID. And they paused the, remember Kay Ivey? She's been governor that long. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. She pauses the election, the primary runoff election, and postpones it to like June or July, late summer, something like that. And Barry Moore surprises everybody, upsets Jeff Coleman by double digits. That's a big swing. And then the other time in recent history in Alabama, at least, I'm sure it's happened all over the country. Paul DeMarco, one of our regulars on this show, actually, Gary Palmer. So Spencer Baucus was the congressman up in the 6th Congressional District. And he abruptly steps aside. It was right after we had in AL1 our abrupt departure of Joe Bonner. It was sort of a similar thing. Mid, out of cycle, special election. DeMarco actually does really, really well in the primary. And it gets, Gary Palmer gets in. There was Scott Beeson, a few others. And then, like, just kind of, there were some setups there. They kept Paul DeMarco. He loses to Gary Palmer. Palmer goes on to be congressman. But big swings like that typically don't happen because you pretty much see, right there, you get a snapshot of that moment in history in a primary. And then now we do this kind of hurry up offense where you had the primary runoff a month later. We didn't used to do that. But if Hudson is able to top Barry Moore in a statewide U.S. Senate runoff would be very highly unprecedented statewide. But everybody's telling me that's what the polls are saying. But remember this, guys. Barry Moore always under polls. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I fly a starship across the universe divide, and when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again, or I may simply be a single drop of rain.
Friday morning, 251-343-0106. Let's get rolling here. There's some text messages. Jason, good morning, Jeff. I agree. Plattner is a dirtbag. But considering how often Susan Collins lets us down and votes with Dems, is it worth even caring about? Is there any difference between them? Yeah, there's considerable difference. I mean, she may be a milquetoast, moderate, rhino, He's an avowed socialist. It's the lesser of the two evils here. But to me, like the story there, though, is just how the system works and rejecting people like Plattner. That they don't want that guy. He's not part of the club. They don't want to deal with that. He's just going to be a headache, a nuisance. They're going to have to, he's going to showboat. He's going to be out in front of the cameras. They don't want the guy like that. He doesn't take it serious. This is just an institution that they may have their differences, and they may even be very, very, very ugly sometimes, but they know that, you're part of the club. So it's worth caring about. You don't have to sweat it, but there is difference ideologically between Susan Collins and Graham Plattner. Troy fan. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for your overview of the demonic DC area. I don't know if you're being facetious there, but it's just, there was just something about reading that story that, gave me flashbacks to it was a different time. It's funny about DC because, like I said, it's totally changed. I remember the day Trump was sworn in, Inauguration Day 2017, and I was standing there on those risers right across the street from the White House and even called in to Sean Sullivan's show during, might have been that morning. Right before, he was set to be, or he had been sworn in and they were getting ready to do the parade down the street. But having been around, it was chilly outside. It was January, but you just got a sense the atmosphere. There's these riots going on in the background, but you could just sense the dark cloud of despair in that town. The Obama days are now over. And it kind of continued even that way to the day, even all throughout the Biden years. Just when COVID really sucked a lot more life out of that town. And now it's just a place, there's still places to go. I caught a couple of Nats games and they've changed the area around the stadium there, but it's not the town that it once was. It wasn't the roaring 20s in Washington, D.C. Toothless Bammer, California elections are a farce. 37 days to count votes. Pratt continues to lose ground. Bassett councilmen keep gaining votes. Do the feds have some jurisdiction over the circus before it's over with? Time Steyer will make a runoff. You just got to discount California and never get your hopes up about it. That's what I think. It's California, and we can only expect so much out of it. One more here before we get to the break. Mike, if you take Hudson's response to Moore's veteran status, it's really pointed at a great reply. I know it's politics, but came off as genuine and shouldn't create the backlash people were talking about. I don't know about that. I don't know about the when you say genuine, because here's the thing, Mike. He's aware of all this chatter, and he is trying to make it sound like it was some kind of media thing. And he knows it isn't. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. But somehow on and on I go. On rolling with the flow. Folks said that I. He asked me how I bought it. I told him on credit that it just smiled.
smile. I'll never forget it. Daddy never was the Cadillac kind. He said some things just glitter and shine.
Back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Text line, you need to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. Still a jam-packed show. Real quick, give you the rundown one more time. I got Steve Marshall coming up in about 30 minutes, top of the 10 o'clock hour. Adam Kincaid from the National Republican Redistricting Trust at 10:30. 11 o'clock, Hunter Johnson from Tide 100.9, a big bammer, and I are going to talk college baseball. And then in the also at 11 o'clock hour, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott, will make time for us. So make sure stick around for all of that. Speaking of guys who are lucky enough to attend a little bit of baseball this evening, our friend from Capital Journal, also Alabama Daily News, Todd Stacey, is with us. Todd, good morning. How are you? Hey, Todd, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time for us, and we appreciate it. Hey, well, you're going to baseball game today. Have you been following it a whole lot this year?
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, I went to a lot of baseball games when I was in school. I haven't been physically to a game in a while, but I'm super excited. I remember last year when Auburn hosted the Super Regional, like, you know, night game, and it Clemson Park was just like electric. I was like, man, if we get another chance to host the Super Regional, I've got to go. And so my roommate from college, his dad works for Auburn, and got, you know, they are able to get, I guess, you know, earlier than most, like, tickets. And so they had an extra. I wasn't going to say no to that. So the Capital Journal will be in the can early today so I can get up to Auburn to watch that baseball game.
That's good. That's good to hear. I looked at tickets, man. That's a premium ticket.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and it's an SEC game. It's Auburn Ole Miss.
That's right. Well, that's
going to be a lot of fun.
Three teams in the Super Regionals here from Alabama.
Yep.
Hey, let's start here. Talk about I guess a contemporary of yours during your time in D.C., for better or for worse, or common contemporary, our mutual friend Lindsey Fifield, but also Graham Plattner of TuneIn bartending fame, right? You kind of know something about him.
Well, so obviously the New York Times had this, I don't know, expose, whatever you call it, just kind of getting into the details of Graham Plattner and his dealings with women and girlfriends. And I mean, read the article. I have my quibbles with it or whatever, but the main focus of the article was Lindsey, as you said, mutual friend of ours. I've known her a long time and was really good friends with her in DC. We hung out a lot at the TuneIn, including when she was dating Graham Plattner, this Senate candidate who's, you know, come into a lot of trouble. So, yeah, I mean, I think we probably met him at the same time. And I don't know why she decided to start dating, but she did. And I was never comfortable with that because the guy was just a weirdo and just kind of unhinged, just kind of volatile. Obviously, he was he had returned from either Iraq or Afghanistan, maybe both. So, and there's just something to that. But I decided to tweet in her support yesterday and did not know that it was going to go viral like it did. But I knew that her coming out and telling her story about how abusive he was and about how intimidating and narcissistic and just all of the things, because she had worked in Republican politics, she was going to be painted as, you know, I don't know, doing it for political reasons or, you know, all
right,
the ways.
Yeah, because those, and I remember when she first got to D.C., but she'd worked in that kind of that arena. She was working for some campaigns and that she was in that business, right?
Yeah, I think she worked for Heritage for a minute. She worked for or for a while, actually. She worked for the U.S. Chamber. I mean, just, you know, if you're up in D.C. and in the conservative world, you hop around a little bit.
But it's a small world, too.
And everybody knows each other. And I believe, bravely decided to trust these New York Times reporters with telling her story, understanding that it's really important. You got a guy running for U.S. Senate in Maine who is just not what he claims to be. And I've been, I remember when it was announced that he was running, because I happened to be hanging out with another old tune-in friend. I guess I'm telling myself all the tune-in experience I had. And we were all just like, what? Graham? There's like a group chat. It was like, Graham Platt, like that Graham, he's running for office? And it was kind of shocking but not surprising, because Graham is this guy that is often wrong but never in doubt, like just so sure of himself but just full of it. And so I guess I wasn't surprised, but he's so problematic. And so I'm not surprised that all this stuff has come out. Lindsay told me about the Nazi tattoo a long time ago, way before it became public. And so, I do have a little bit of information about this. And Jeff, you know me. I don't speak out. I don't tweet, get out there and stuff. But I saw this and I had to come to Lindsay's defense and support to say, hey, she's telling the truth. And I think she's courageous for doing it.
Well, it gave me flashbacks talking about the old tune in. So my time there was a little before yours, but, that was kind of the place where a lot of Hill staffers and people like that, that's where they would go after work, right?
Yeah. And that's what it was. And that's, Graham was a regular that became a bartender. Like he would always hang out on the porch, drinking beer, smoking cigarettes, that kind of stuff. Kind of holding court. Again, he's a charismatic guy. Again, often wrong, never in doubt. And then I guess he was kind of between jobs and ended up picking up bartending. But, back then, Jeff, he was a libertarian, right? He was like committed libertarian, but he's just kind of a contrarian, and that's fine. But it's funny.
Know the type, the guy who knows it all.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, just kind of, maybe almost ignorant of the system and how it kind of works, and why can't we just do it this way? And it's just, not a feasible sort of mentality, especially in Washington, D.C., like just steps away from the Capitol.
Right. And it kind of works at TuneIn. It's just like any other kind of dive bar where that's what you do. You talk about politics. You talk about, hey, these people work on the Hill. These people work in the White House, it's on campaigns. You had liberals, you had conservatives, and that's fun. That's fun when you're hanging out. But it was not hard to see that this was a troubled individual, and I was troubled that Lindsay dated him, honestly. And that's what I said in my tweet, that I was never comfortable with that because of how just aggressive and I don't know. He just kind of seemed like an angry guy, and that all that's coming out now.
Joined by Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal. Election cycle, here in Alabama, it does feel like now we're kind of in the, I don't know, call it desperation stage, but we avoided this moment, except maybe for the AG race where it really got like chippy throughout the entirety of that primary cycle. But here it is, we're less than 2 weeks away, and it's starting to feel like elections typically go.
It's you mentioned AG race, that's been kind of that way from the very beginning. Lieutenant governor race is getting a little chippy. I'm having both of those candidates on the show this week, Wes Allen and John Wall, and I'm gonna let them respond to the various attacks and things like that. But I'm not sure voters necessarily care so much about that, about the various attacks and things like that. It's really about name ID and getting your people out to vote. We're about to have a very low turnout election on the 16th, a little more than a week away. And so you, as a candidate, as a campaign, you've got to get your people out, make sure your folks go to the polls. It's that's going to decide things way more than any kind of attack ad or mudslinging or anything like that. So now how to do that is a whole different ball game. People get paid a lot of money to figure all that out. But you've got to get your people to the polls, and you've got to make sure that you're the name that they remember when they cast that ballot.
Well, and I mean, I know we're going to get a drop in turnout, but maybe turnout is not quite as historically bad as it has been. I mean, there's a lot more in this runoff than certainly in 22, but even 18, when 18 just had a lieutenant governor's race, that, you know, this will be, and I don't know how Democrat turnout's going to impact that, because there's not a lot on the Democrat side, and all those Democrats who voted in the primary can't vote in the Republican runoff.
Right.
So, you know, but
it's an important point. People forget that they passed that law, I guess, 2012, 2013 or so. Important crossover and ban on crossover voting that people forget.
Yeah. So, it does seem like there's a little more interest at this point than maybe. And, you know, it's, I don't remember quite remember what it was like, you know, what, 12, you know, and or whatever it was, you know, those runoffs throughout the years where the state cycle has got stuff going on. But I think this will be way more enthusiastic, I guess. Maybe not numbers. We won't get general election numbers, but we ought to get a little more interest in the typical.
Well, I hope so. And as we've talked about before, the lack of kind of action at the top of the ticket, meaning governor, that's been the whole thing all along. Why people just aren't so, you know, amped up about this election. So, I mean, I can even think back into the 90s about how, you know, Fob James, when he was running for reelection, had to go to a runoff with Winton Blunt. Bob Riley, when he was running against Siegelman, people remember Riley Siegelman, but Riley had to defeat Steve Windham in a runoff. You know, then 2010, Bradley Byrne, Tim James. So when there's a runoff in the at the top of the ticket for governor that's really energetic and juiced up, then yeah, people get really excited about that. The Senate runoff, it's not been as chippy. Which I guess is a good thing. It kind of started up a little bit, but it's calmed down a little bit. But yeah, I hope people do turn out. It's, you know, far be it for me to tell you why people decide to vote or decide not to, but I really hope they do, because all these races are important. It really matters who we elect to the U.S. Senate. It really matters who the AG is.
Well, one more question, and we'll get you out of here, but like the – do you think these congressional, the map and the court stuff and you know, this was a concern of a lot of these candidates running, that there was going to be confusion and they may stay at home, but I don't know that to be the case necessarily.
I think there is confusion. I think there's frustration. And I hear that from just regular folks I talk to, including like family members who are very confused about when to vote or what district they're in and that kind of thing. So that's, but none of that's really on the ballot on, you know, Tuesday after next, but anytime there's just more confusion about when to vote or how, or who you're voting for. Yeah. That just increases the incentive to not vote, or the disincentive, I suppose. So yeah, it's not good. And I can't find anybody. We'll not be able to find anybody that says, hey, that's going to really increase voter turnout. Maybe for the Democrats. I think it probably did help the Democrats in the primary, and it might help them in the general.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, there's no like real Democrat runoff, contested runoffs. I guess maybe like lieutenant governor. I just it's not something I've kept up with. So I expect that turnout number to. It was really Democrats bolstering that turnout number last month.
Now Inslee made it over the hump. I think they've got
Senate
secretary. Yeah,
they've got a Senate runoff. Yeah, I'm sorry, I knew that. I just get my races mixed.
Well, and they've got a six. They've got a couple of congressional races and things like that. But governor, lieutenant governor, and AG. So the top races are all.
All kind of decided.
They got a nominee. Yeah.
Hey Todd, tell folks what you got on Capital Journal tonight. Tell folks how to sign up for your newsletter.
Well, as I mentioned, going to be talking with Wes Allen and John Wall, the two candidates for lieutenant governor. We'll get to the other campaigns next week. Also, you know, last week we had the fellows from Boys State on Capital Journal. Well, this week it's Girls State's turn. They're in town this week, and so we'll have the governor and lieutenant governor from Girls State on TV. It's always a lot of fun because these young people are going to be the next generation of Alabama leaders, so it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, Capital Journal tonight, 7:30 on Alabama Public Television.
Todd, we appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Jeff. Be good.
All right. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
When you need experts who get real.
What is a foodie?
About real issues.
What annoys you at restaurants?
Hear real local food and beverage experts.
Mike Bailey, this is how he eats his hot dog. This is the bun. This is the hot dog. He'll take the hot dog out, get a knife and fork, cut it up, eat it with his fork, and then he'll go back and eat the bun.
Yep, really?
No, that's the way I like it.
Sip and Chew with Mike and Stu, Sunday mornings at 11 on FM Talk 106.5. Play me a song, Curtis Love, Curtis Love. Well, I got your drinking money, tune up your dobro.
People said it was useless, them people all were fools. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Hit me up on that text line. Let me know what's on your mind. Coming up in the next segment, Steve Marshall, our attorney general, pretty much booked up solid here throughout the program. So we'll try to get to your text intermittently as much as you can get them in. Let's see here. Paul said that was hilarious. DI texter. Sounds like you and Toddy are coming down with a case of platinum derangement syndrome. And such thing exists. He's somebody I'd rather not think about. I just, it's so far from like the relevancy of what's going on here in Alabama, but there's an Alabama tie there. But it's, whatever. I think it's instructive in the kind of not so much the D versus R, I guess, but just the system itself. I mean, this guy sounds like he was not a Boy Scout, but this is not the kind of guy that is of United States Senate timber, if you will. Unnamed texter, the new District 2, that should be somewhat favorable to Republicans. Can Democrats vote in Republican primaries figures as unopposed in the D primary? They can muddle up the race by voting for the weakest R and still vote for figures in the general. So, no, the problem there is a lot of Democrat voters showed up to vote on May 19th, and they voted in the Democratic primary. When you vote in a Democrat primary, you're automatically unable to vote in the other party's primary runoff. Now, you could be a Democrat, and if you didn't vote, you could show up and vote in the runoff. But if you voted in the primary as a Democrat, you can't cross over. So that, and they had very, very high turnout. So in District 2, they're not going to be able to be a spoiler in the way that they were. And this was always the allegation, if you guys remember, back in 2010 with Tim James, Bradley Byrne, and the Robert Bentley. And remember, it was just a slugfest between Tim James and Bradley Byrne. Tim James did not make the runoff. Robert Bentley sort of had a blocking and tackling campaign. He let those two guys duke it out and flew under the radar. And then ultimately, Tim James is so bloodied up from this back and forth with Bradley Bird. Bradley Bird wants to plurality. But Robert Bentley, well, this is another of those examples that I was talking about where the candidate won the plurality in the primary doesn't win the runoff. But the suspicion always was at the time that the AEA was, they had Bradley derangement syndrome. And they encouraged their membership and their voters to go show up and vote for Robert Bentley in that runoff. And that's what happens. Robert Bentley becomes governor. And here it is, 2026, 16 years later. And it's like we're still living through this Robert Bentley hangover with Governor Ivey. Remember, Governor Ivey was in that election cycle, did not really get any traction, and dropped out and got into lieutenant governor's race. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.